Ice cold beer.
Popcorn, peanuts, Cracker Jack.
I know what the big deal about Cracker Jack is. Did you ever go and buy a pack of Cracker Jack thinking you'd get a prize and find no prize in the box?
Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
To the ball game, take me out to the crowd, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back, we'll root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. 1, 2, 3 strikes you out at the old ball game.
All right, welcome back to the Bench Jockeys here on 101.5 UMFM. I'm Michael Elves, joined in the dugout by my pal Brian Svensson.
What's up?
And joining us on the bullpen phone, Chris Zook.
Let's go.
So I'm going to start pouring one out for Corey Kluber. Much as, obviously Cleveland is one of my AL nemeses, I don't have the ill feelings towards them that I do towards the Yankees, right? If the entire Yankees squad was on the IL, which, I mean, at this point we're about halfway there, I would have no feelings about that other than, thank goodness, couldn't happen to a better team. But Kluber, I have no ill will against this guy. Great pitcher. I just want to beat him. I want him to be on the mound, and I want the Twins to, like, light him up. I don't want him to break his forearm on a 102-mile-per-hour comebacker. So I'm pouring one out to start things off for him.
Yeah, that's fair. I agree with that 100%. Like, you hate to see it. It really shines light on the kind of strategy that the Cleveland professional baseball team came into the season with, is that they wanted to go with a real stars and scrubs roster. They planned on having one of the best rotations in the AL, in Major League Baseball, probably of the last 20 or so years. And they planned on having extremely good hitting from a couple players, namely Francisco Lindor and Jose Ramirez. And they just haven't...
The aspiration of re-signing Carlos Santana and hoping he would provide a little pop as well.
Correct. And just kind of coast on that and a bunch of replacement-level players and hopefully win a weak division in the AL Central. Instead, what has happened is Mike Clevinger's got hurt, Corey Kluber has gotten hurt, Francisco Lindor hasn't really been all that healthy, and as a result, they're trailing behind the MLB best record-holding Minnesota Twins.
Let's do this right now, Mike. I'll do this for you. I'm going to tip the hat to the Twins here, because I'm telling you right now, this might not happen all year, but they are leading the MLB right now, going into this weekend with the best record in baseball. And the funny thing is, they still have Sano, who's supposed to be coming back soon here. They are not even at full strength here.
Twins are good.
The Twinkies are for real,
the
Michael.
Twinkies
can
are good.
You believe it? At the end, at the start of May now, this is actually a division they can have if they continue to do. I mean, how do you feel, Michael? This team is for real.
I don't know about for real, but
I'm going to say that.
This is the hesitancy is still there, but
sure.
What I really liked was these two wins against Houston.
They won 3-4 against Houston. 3-4.
Yeah, that they and it, like Berríos pitched super well.
Yep.
Again against a really good hitting team.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's the hitting has really not been something I've been worried about with the Twins. Like they've developed like Kepler, Rosario. We've got young guys who can hit, and then they signed guys like CJ Cron came
in. La Tortuga.
They've got some pop. And a relatively balanced batting order, there's no huge holes, But the pitching has always been the big question mark, and they're getting some good pitching, and Berrios is looking like that ace that I've dreamt of for Minnesota for so many years.
I mean, more than just that as well, they've gotten great pitching from more than just him, right?
Kyle Gibson.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kyle Gibson's been really good as well. You know, they've gotten some good pitching, at least a little bit good pitching out of Blake Parker, Jake Odorizzi. You know, it's been crazy.
I get where Michael's going with this. The trepidation is like with any fan base that, you know, no different than, let's say, you know, the Jets or fans who kind of get expectation too high and then they get let down by their team. I know it's only May, Michael, but I will say this. Considering where they're coming from last year and the unknown and the question marks here, I mean, it's good to at least enjoy it, and you're right that, you know, things can, you know, it's only May, we're not even at the All-Star break, but it's I think this series against Houston was pretty telling that, you know you can beat up against Baltimore and that's all good, and you can beat up against a lot of the soft teams,
right?
You know, Houston's a legitimate team, a World Series contender, they've won a World Series, right? And to win 3 out of 4 in the fashion that they did, I think is promising because they haven't done that so far, you know, in the past with this squad. And like I said, Sano is still kicking around there. He comes back. I mean, I don't even know. Maybe they don't want to put him in there. Their lineup's going good right now.
But yeah, they might actually be better off without Miguel Sano than with him.
Maybe they showcase him. Maybe they can trade him down the road. Who knows, right? But, I mean, they're in a position of strength for the first time in a while. And this is, you know, it's nothing but positive people, you know. I don't, you know, people are maybe your Twins, they're Blue Jay fans, or maybe they're Twins fans because of the geographic location of the proximity of Winnipeg. But it's fantastic, right? Because they're actually trying to combine hitting and pitching for the first time in a while, and right now they're leading the league.
Yeah, no, I'm happy. Like I'm legitimately happy, but as with anything, it's a long season and things can happen. But you know, certainly not that I wished two of the best pitchers on Cleveland to go on the IL, but that certainly helps us.
Yeah,
that buys us a lot of time where Cleveland's going to struggle.
Yeah.
And we can put some ground between
us. The American League has been all kinds of topsy-turvy this year. Minnesota winning the Central right now. You've got the Rays on top of the AL East, and the Mariners kicking around the lead of the AL West. It's been weird.
You would have got some good money if you would have picked those three to start May.
Oh, the odds would have been super long on the Rays. I can only imagine what kind of odds to start the season you would have got for the Rays to win the AL.
The Rays maybe a bit, to win the AL, yeah. I mean, sure. I mean, but I just think I think the Twins are kind of the surprise team right now, judging from where they finished off last year, right? A lot of question marks, new manager, and, you know, and they're right there, which is fantastic. And you're right, Mike. I mean, the cautious fan in you is probably correct to not, you know, start the parade route or anything like that. But it's good signs for a change, because last year was a pretty much of a lost year, right? So, I mean, it's good on a fan base to have something of not only hope, but actually a legitimate, you know, option here of that they can make a run this year.
Yeah, I'm not a hubristic fan like, you know, like a Yankee who thinks he's born on third or something. But, you know, I do think that the cards are falling in such a way that it works really well for us in the AL Central. And obviously you were saying, you know, you can beat up on the Baltimores of the world, but to win something against the Astros, who are like a legit team, I mean, really, like, I think they've gotten better since they won the World Series in terms of their lineup.
Maybe.
You don't
potentially
think?
I don't necessarily know pitching wise if they have or haven't. I mean, like, you could say that, yeah, they've brought in some other pitchers, but at the same time, like, some of their other pitchers have gotten old and or left in some cases, right? Like, you know, losing Dallas Keuchel and Charlie Morton, that doesn't help.
I think they're still
Verlander getting a year older
Astros?
Doesn't help.
Sorry, what was that, Zook?
I think they're a formidable team still, the Astros.
I agree.
They're right there, right? I mean, yeah, I'm not too sure if they're exactly better than their World Series team that they had a couple years ago, but they're right there, right? And I think, it's just a good barometer early in the season to go, hey, where the Twins match up? Well, they actually do match up, right? I mean, that's a solid statement there moving forward.
Well, I think like someone like Bregman has gotten better.
Yeah.
Since they, like,
some players have gotten better.
He was young enough that they've gotten better. They've got, I think Verlander has like reestablished himself, right? Like when he came over, it was like, this is a good pitcher moving into a better team.
Right.
But a lot of people thought his salad days were behind him.
Correct.
And I think he's gotten,
correct,
like his best stuff back.
And I agree. And Garrett Cole has gotten back to his best stuff. But like, again, like I, you know, Dallas Keuchel won.
And it kills me to say this, but Ryan Presley.
Yeah, he's good.
Who used to be a Twin.
He's good.
He's is really a good. Phenomenal, like, late inning guy.
I mean, they've got a whole bunch of really good players. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's hard to say whether or not they are better or roughly the same. But they, I think Zook's right. They're about the same.
Well, I know that Brian's chomping at the bit to talk about something, and it's not Vlad Guerrero or the Blue Jays.
Okay, good.
So we're going to get to it.
We talked a lot about that last week.
It's coming off. Yeah, I know. I missed that for I was taking the kids to Avengers Endgame because it was in school, right. School in service. So, I mean, if you're not going to talk baseball, you might as well go watch a giant comic book movie. Earlier this week, I emailed Brian this article by Tim Daniels of Bleacher Report, and he was like, yeah, on my docket already. I want to talk about this. And so Tim Anderson of the Chicago White Sox, I wouldn't say like a polarizing figure, but they're like a weird kind of blowback to him right now.
He's starting to become one, which is a shame.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously he hit that home run against the Royals. He flipped his bat. His next time up, he got beaned, by Royals pitcher Keller. And, you know, he kind of postures towards the mound and uses some language that a young African-American individual should be allowed to use however they see fit. And it starts a brawl, and Keller gets a suspension for 5 games, of which he won't start again, so why does it matter? And Tim Anderson gets suspended for a game for flipping his bat and using a word that the old white commissioner of Major League Baseball should have absolutely no place to police a young African-American gentleman using. And not only that, but, you know, he gets a deadly projectile thrown at him at an incredibly fast speed. And it's basically they're trying to cow. I think it's just it's systematic racial oppression of the spirit and style of a very talented, blossoming young African-American player on the verge of becoming potentially a star for the Chicago White Sox. And I think it's just embarrassing for the league to go ahead and tout all these let the kids play. You know, we want people to show their enthusiasm and their culture and their roots. And then when a young
push came to shove.
Yeah, when a young person of color does something that shows how excited he is, not you know, styling on the opposing team, but just trying to get excited with his own team, you know, because he throws the bat towards his own dugout and makes a gesture towards his own dugout. He doesn't stare down the pitcher. He doesn't make any gestures towards the pitcher. And then the pitcher gets red arsed enough to come out and throw at him with a deadly weapon. And Major League Baseball basically sides with the pitcher. And I'm tired of it. It's ridiculous. It's nonsensical. And if we're going to stand here and say that we want the game to be more diverse, we have to help promote that. And the Let the Kids Play initiative is all smoke. It's all puff. It's all pomp. It's all circumstance. And when someone actually goes ahead and does something to showcase any sort of emotion and exuberance and personality, the league and its unwritten rules and come down and crack down on the player, potentially hurt him, and then suspend him for a game. It's awful, and I'm tired of it.
I like that. That's good. Are you off the soapbox now, Brian?
Yeah, I'm done.
No, okay, here's the thing. This is, we've talked about this endlessly. They want to promote young players, but then they don't want to promote them the way they act on the field. They're trying to be young, let them be young. I will say the one thing is, there is still part of the game. I'm not saying it's right. It's no different than fighting in hockey in some respects. Is
another
that,
thing that I think shouldn't exist anymore.
Well, fair enough. But I'm just saying is this is, we're talking about 150 years of this tradition, right? Of we do it on the field and we're going to police it by, we didn't like that you showed me up, even though it might not be right, but they do, you know, we're going to brush them back and that's how it goes.
Change has to start someplace though.
I agree.
And change could have started here. Change could have started here by Rob Manfred and Major League Baseball suspending Keller for a start. So 6 games or whatever, 7 games, whatever you need to do to suspend him for a start, and not suspending Tim Anderson. They could have done that. That could have been a step in the right direction, saying, hey, he didn't do anything to hurt you. All he did was showcase emotion, and you went out there and threw at him, and that's unacceptable. And that could have been a change, and that's an easy change to make. You support players.
I don't think they're there yet, Brian. I don't think they can say it's unacceptable because
well, and that's what I mean. It's systematic racial oppression. It's Major League Baseball looking and going, we don't want to scare our old white fans. We're gonna punish and suspend this young black player for doing something that doesn't have any bearing at all on the actual game, other than making it more fun to watch.
I think there's two different things that kind of need to be separated and dealt with. The first is the stuff around these like unwritten rules and the retaliatory pitches for, you know, when someone doesn't like a player showboating. And we've talked about this before, that like if you don't want someone to flip the bat,
don't allow
strike
the home
them
run.
Out.
Don't give up the home run.
Right? Like that's the simple like equation when it comes to this, right?
Yeah, exactly.
If they get the home run, they are entitled to.
You know, these pitchers go around and they puff their chest out and they dance and in some cases do whatever they need to do, point, arrow,
yeah, I was
going to
say, like, you know, the Fernando Rodney, like, arrow thing or, the pumping
Marcus,
your chest, pointing
Stroman
to the sky. Like,
fine. If you want to do that, that's fine. But if
no
a player
one
hits a
gets
home,
to do something,
if
then,
a player, if, yeah, if a player hits a home run, then let him flip the bat.
So, as far as that goes, I am, like, 100% on board that, like, Tim Anderson should not have been thrown against.
At all.
And if you were to take this outside of the ballpark where, like, you know, it seems like normal, like, rules that you would be policed by the police don't apply, if someone threw something at you,
that's assault.
They're the aggressor. They're assault. You are allowed to defend yourself.
Correct.
You're allowed to react to that, right?
Yeah.
So Tim Anderson getting, like, essentially the exact same punishment.
Worse punishment, well, you could argue.
Well, yeah, okay, so, I mean, essentially they're trying to bake it in so that it's one game each, right? One start versus one game. Now, obviously with the way the schedule lines up, it doesn't necessarily mean that the pitcher, Keller, gets the same punishment.
They'll just push back his start.
But that said, if you were outside of the ballpark, it would be ridiculous to think that the person who got thrown at gets the... any punishment,
it's ridiculous.
Let alone the same punishment.
It's nonsensical.
To me, that's ridiculous. This like unwritten rules around, like, you know, not showing emotion and, you know, playing the game the right way, which is, as we've said, like very like coded racialized language. Totally on board. That said, the word that Anderson used, I appreciate that. I can't say to an African-American they can't use that word, but within the context of the ballpark, because we are trying to eliminate certain language.
Fair. Family environment.
You know, we talked about this with, like, Kevin Pillar and the language that he used.
Correct.
We don't want this language used in the ballpark by anyone.
That's fair, but it is really hard as... I just think it's a really hard situation. Like, I am on the borderline of agreeing with you on that. I just think it's really hard for Rob Manfred and the Major League Disciplinary Committee to be the ones to police him for using that word.
It's a tricky situation, but let's say there was an out player in baseball, right? I mean,
right?
It's going to happen. I feel like it's going to happen at some point. Someone will, come forward and play as an out player.
I hope so soon.
Are they allowed to use a slur?
Man, that's tough. Probably not.
You know, if they called another player something,
It's just really tough for Major League Baseball to be the one policing that, though. I get it. I do. And if, like, Tony Clark was, for example, the head of the MLBPA, was the one to say, like, hey, Tim, like, you can't be using that language, that's a little more on the okay, because it is an African-American former player telling an African-American player, like, you might want to quit with that word.
I think what Michael's saying might be correct about that. If you don't...
We're trying to create a family environment for Major League Baseball, and I agree with that.
And a respectful environment where, you know, everyone addresses each other...
Right, and
in a way that...
And I do agree with that.
Regardless of family.
I do agree with that. As, like, holistically, I do agree with that idea. I just think it's incredibly tough. Like, if I was commissioner, it'd be incredibly tough for me as a white dude to tell him, bud, you can't use that word. Like, it's tough. It's a difficult thing.
If you want to, like, post it on your Instagram account or talk about it in the locker room, but when you're on that field, everyone is bound to a specific set of language that is just not allowed.
That is fair.
It's not necessary. It's not central to the game.
That's fair.
We don't want it from anyone.
That's fair. That's fair.
Like, and I don't think that is prohibitive against, like, emotion or like celebration or anything like that.
Yeah, that's a fair take.
I think the other thing where maybe Brian is going off a bit, which I think is fair comment, is it's still the one-to-one ratio, right? That what Keller did compared to what Anderson did in the minds of MLB is a one-to-one, right? And it's not, because Anderson, it doesn't get in that position if
Keller doesn't throw at him.
Right. You know, and so it leads to the next step, right? And the next step is Anderson, you know, losing his cool a bit and showing emotion.
Anderson's is a reactive one.
Yeah.
It didn't happen in a vacuum. He didn't just decide to tell Keller off and call him the N-word.
I would like to say that I'm glad that the next time Tim Anderson hit a home run, he bat flipped again. And when asked about it, he said, I had to do it again to show him it wasn't a fluke. And I'm glad. I'm glad that he's going out there and continuing to be himself, because we need more players like Tim Anderson. One last thing. You know, MLB talks and peacock feathers and parrots all the time that is trying to make the game more diverse. The peak percentage of African-American players in baseball was in 1984 with 18.4% African-American players in the game. Since about 2004, they have been getting progressively less. The percentage has dropped from 10% in 2004 to 6.7 in 2016. It has gone all the way down to 6.3 as of this year. Baseball has been getting more white. It has not been getting more Latino or more ethnic. It has been getting more white since 2004. And, you know, I just think that, you know, you can't be using all this coded racialized language and trying to say that you're promoting diversity when, you know, you're doing all this stuff that really isn't.
Sure enough. Turning to a few kind of hat tips, you know, I don't like the Yankees, but I'm going to tip my cap to CC Sabathia, who became just the third lefty to hit the 3,000 strikeout mark.
Good for him.
I've heard talk of him being a Hall of Famer. I do not agree with that, but good on him making.
I mean, obviously, reaching around number like 3,000 will likely help his candidacy, right? Because, you know, there are just certain benchmarks that seem to be ones. And I mean, he's played long enough that obviously there's also the wins. I think he's like a borderline. I would have to look at his like his WAR and stuff to compare him to pitchers that are already in. On the face of it, he doesn't feel like one, but at the same time, you have to look at comparative to who's already in there.
It's tough. I'm trying to find the.
So he's just one. Just one of 17 pitchers to reach 3,000 strikeouts,
right.
And obviously three.
I'm trying to find the Hall of Fame tracker.
Sure, I mean, the for me, just it's just what you just said, Michael. Like, if we're kind of debating it, like he's not a slam dunk. One, for sure, and second is I think he's bubble at best I mean, it's just also because maybe his career's kind of petered out here at the end. And I mean, he was a dominant pitcher in his prime, but you'd have to make some cases of who he's kind of compared to, who's already in the Hall of Fame, to kind of push to, well, you know, I mean, yeah.
Here's one comparison, and this is from an ESPN story about the game in which he hit the 3,000 strikeout mark. One of only three black pitchers to have amassed 3,000 strikeouts in their careers, Bob Gibson and Fergie Jenkins, both in the Hall of Fame, the other two.
Yeah. So for the record, the JAWS system, the Jaffe War Score system, which it tracks and predicts the average WAR, the average WAR per position of a player in the Hall of Fame at each position. So the average wins above replacement for a starting pitcher in the Hall of Fame is 61.8. CC Sabathia, without finishing this year, is currently sitting at 63.2 wins above replacement. He won't be eligible to go in until like a couple years from now.
Mm-hmm.
And with 3,000, he'll probably end up at about 65 wins above replacement. With having 3,000 strikeouts, I think he's in.
Yeah.
And the awards to go with it too.
Yeah, obviously, this same article talks about, essentially there was like 3,000 hits, 500 homers, 3,000 strikeouts, 300 wins. These are kind of those round numbers that people look at on resumes.
Six-time All-Star, Cy Young Award winner, 3,000 strikeouts, career 3.69 whip, almost 250 wins. He'll get that this year. He'll end up with 65 wins above replacement, 3,000 strikeouts. I think he's in.
Well, the other person who hit a milestone this past week is Steven Strasburg, who hit 1,500K, so halfway to the CC mark. And I want to tip my cap to Nick Senzel, who gets the call up this week for the Reds.
Big Nick.
Is a very legitimate top prospect, and I'm glad to see. I mean, we've talked about this in the past, about these guys staying down in the minors so the teams can extend their contracts. It's just always exciting when those prospects finally actually do play in the bigs.
The thing with Senzel, too, is that he has been consistently blocked for the Reds, right? He's a big-name prospect, but he's a middle infielder,
mm-hmm.
or a corner outfielder in some instances, and that means that he's blocked by Eugenio Suarez. He was blocked for a while by the red-hot Scooter Gennett. So where are you going to play him? Well, the Reds apparently are planning on playing him as a super utility guy, and so... fantasy wise, if he's not owned in your league, I would actually go and pick him up, because he's probably going to end up with second base, third base, maybe first base, and definitely outfield eligibility for a guy that, in theory, could probably hit about 20 home runs and maintain a solid average.
Perfect. Well, we pretty much have to hand things over to Democracy Now. We got a couple commercials coming up before Amy Goodman takes the waves. But we'll be back next Friday here on the Bench Jockeys. Thanks for tuning in, and enjoy your weekends, folks.
Play ball.